How do you solve a problem like Anton? In 1969, the musicologist Derek Cook first published an influential but basically unreadable essay on the Austrian composer Anton Bruckner. It was called The Bruckner Problem, simplified. Misleading title. And even though Cook revised the piece for a 1975 version, he never quite put the problem to bed. The problem being, ironically, the proliferation of alternative versions of Bruckner's symphonies, some rewritten by the self-doubting composer, some edited, and some even expanded by friends. Irish composer Dave Flynn has recently been doing some deep listening on the catalogue of Bruckner symphonies, where the Bruckner problem is amplified by the new takes generations of conductors and orchestras have offered. Flynn brought his MacBook, all but capsizing under the weight of digital variants, to Culture File Towers for some simplification. So how do you hold a moonbeam in your hand?
34 different scores for the 9 symphonies exist in the composer's own hand and those of others. Only the 5th and the 6th are free of such intervention. Derek Cook, he was an English kind of scholar and primarily an expert on Mahler's music, and he is most famous perhaps for finishing Mahler's 10th symphony. But he also had a great interest in Bruckner, and he wrote this essay in 1970 called The Bruckner Problem Simplified.
So he was announcing the problem and simplifying it all at once?
Well, yes, but I guess the problem was known. Any conductor or any programmer who came to Bruckner's music had this problem from the beginning. So a conductor coming wanting to, say, do the 3rd or the 8th symphony, well, what edition did they choose? You know, this, and which is the most authentic one? Is there an authentic one? It seems to be mainly down to Bruckner being a very, very humble guy. You know, he was kind of prone to a lot of self-doubt, and he would take criticism. So, say, the 3rd symphony, when it was premiered, it was a disastrous premiere. He was conducting, and most of the audience walked out by the end. Interestingly, Mahler was in the audience, and he stayed, and he loved it, and he became a big fan of Bruckner. But when these kind of things happened, Bruckner just felt, oh, this isn't good enough, I'll have to revise it. And sometimes the problem was not necessarily Bruckner, it was the conservative audience in Vienna at the time. It may seem strange now listening to Bruckner, because his style has been copied so much, it influenced so many composers. You hear Bruckner sound in Hollywood movies, in Star Wars, Lord of the Rings.
You can hear, even in the earlier pieces, say in the 3rd symphony, this kind of thing that he was famous for, it's kind of car crash. He just piles huge banks of string into each other in a kind of like reckless driving way. Yeah. And you'd imagine that must be slightly disturbing for your audience.
Yeah, well, you can imagine in the late 19th century what it was like. You know, we're talking about a time when Wagner's music was kind of controversial then, and it's not long after some of Beethoven's music was causing audiences confusion and took a while to be accepted.
One of the things that all this confusion around what is the right version and who helped him with this piece and who made cuts and even rewrote sections.
Well, I think with Bruckner pieces, most of the major changes were done by himself. So the Haas edition of the 8th Symphony, he merged bits of an 1887 and an 1890 version of the score by Bruckner. He's taking thoughts of Bruckner from different versions and kind of imagining his own version of it. And he also added in a few things himself there.
You've got your laptop in front of you there, and yeah, it is loaded up with the infinite Bruckner playlist, and you're going to show us some of the things that matter, yeah, when we're working out which is the version we want.
Yeah, well, that is the question. What is the version you want? Like, the 4th Symphony is probably the most problematic there, because he went through quite a lot of revisions, and the original version has completely different pieces. The scherzo movement, the 3rd movement, is completely different. In terms of Bruckner, one of his most famous pieces is the Scherzo in the more, the better known later edition of the Fourth Symphony. And this is, I'll play the start of this. They call, this is kind of the hunting Scherzo. It's like depicting a hunt. So that was Daniel Barenboim and the Berlin Philharmonic. And then the original version, which we have now, Simone Jung and the Hamburg Philharmonic. This is the Scherzo, the opening of the Scherzo. So it's a completely different piece for the 12 minutes 45 of Simone Jung's one and the 10 minutes 23 of Barenboim's one. They're completely different pieces, literally. In the original version, there's more reference to the general theme of the full symphony. Like, say, here's the opening movement of the original version. So you just hear that opening and then go back to this. This is Simone Jung's version with the Hamburg Philharmonic. And this is the Urfassung original version from 1874. So that's just a little kind of almost like a reference back to the first movement, to kind of a slow kind of horn call. Whereas when he revised it and did the new Scherzo, the hunting, that's kind of not there. So people who kind of endorse the original version say that as good as this hunting Scherzo is, it's maybe not as organically connected to the symphony as a whole. But then on the other hand, there's some, I've read some people say that the original Scherzo movement is one of the weakest of Bruckner's Scherzos. So it's all personal preference, you know.
Dave Flynn there on some shades of the Bruckner problem, and we'll have the second part of that conversation delving into Bruckner's Symphony No. 8 next time on Culture File. Meanwhile, the RTE NSO is in the midst of a mini Bruckner cycle, which this Friday reaches Symphony No. 8 in the Haas 1887-90 version, conducted by Michael Gert, this coming Friday in the National Concert Hall in Dublin.